Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
At all publicly traded companies. So what the threat is, how far does this go?
Well, that's scary, and I think then even I would start saying this is socialism and, you know, very, very negative.
To me, it's plainly unacceptable at a time when the American public is being asked to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out major institutions and trillions more to stabilize the financial system, that these institutions would turn around and reward the very same executives that many of whom created the current crisis.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love?
It is the Savage Nation. Rock and Roll Friday. Executive pay is the issue for the moment. I don't know how long I'm going to stay on the issue of executive pay because I'm not a journalist. I am a talk show host. And although most of them are high school dropouts, because my education level is so high, I may not be able to stay with this for very long. I'm sure they could stay with it for years, because anything that's socialist is good, because that's what their boss Barry says. Anything Barry says, Brian Williams agrees with. Anything that comes out from the pinnacle of Barry, Charles Gibson agrees with. Anything that Barry says, Shep Smith agrees with. Anything that Barry says, Larry King agrees with. Anything that Barry says, Chris Matthews agrees with. Anything that he says, you get the picture, because they're journalists. And as you well know, journalists are smarter than everybody else, even though they're mostly high school dropouts, or they did 2 years of college before going on to working for Jimmy Carter. And then they wound up in the news business because they have a large head of hair, which they share, by the way, with alcoholics. It's interesting to me that people with a lot of hair have one thing in common. So we're talking about executive pay on the Savage Nation. I actually agree with Schumer up to a point. Now, I know that many knee-jerk Republicans are going to say, what, are you crazy? There should be no executive compensation caps because that's socialism, and all of them are going to leave and take a job with foreign firms. You know what I say? Let them go. Good riddance. Let them go to work for Credit Suisse. Who needs them? Let the gangsters take a trip. There's plenty of competent people who work for a reasonable salary who can do just as good a job. They're crooks. Let them take a walk. Let them take their offspring with them and take a job in Switzerland. What do you mean there should be no executive caps on compensation in a public company? I didn't say in a private company. If you're working for a public company, why should there be no caps on executive compensation? So in that regard, I agree with Schumer and the communists in the government. But you see, they're telling you a half-truth, and I'm going to give you the whole truth and nothing but the truth. The whole truth is that if you're going to start limiting executive compensation, why don't you start with the former Treasury Secretary who bankrupted America? Start with him. Let's start with the guy who started the downfall, the guy who worked for Bush, the Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, who fundamentally took $700 billion of your money, put it into a fund called TARP, and paid off his friends in seven or eight large firms on Wall Street. So let's start with Hank Paulson and what he took out of the system and the gangsters in those companies, and then work our way into the other companies, and then we could at least start on an even footing, on an even playing field. You know what I'm saying? I haven't – no callers yet, I know, because it's not sexy. It's not a sexy topic. Money – you know, I found out in talk radio that money and statistics and data doesn't – no one listens to it. It's like dead Q factor. It's Friday late afternoon on the East West Coast. It's Friday evening already on the East Coast. Who cares about money right now? People are interested in other things. They're, thank God the week is over. They have a job on Monday, they hope. They got a long weekend ahead of them, the soccer field, the soccer moms, whatever, that people do. What do normal people do over a weekend? I don't even know. I'm not normal, so I don't. What do normal people do on a weekend? Do they actually work harder trying to entertain themselves? Do they do Monday to Friday? Don't they ever get a day of rest? Don't they take a deep breath and say, God, thank you, I'm alive? Don't they ever stop for a minute and say, God, I'm a human being made of arteries and vessels and little things in my body that if even one of these vessels were to clog up, I would be dead. It's a miracle that I'm alive. Doesn't anyone do that anymore? In the sense that I'm not normal, I do things like that. So I actually agree there should be a salary cap in CEO pay, top three people in public companies. I realize that knee-jerk Republicans, particularly those in the media who graduated from the from broadcasting schools in sports broadcasting, will disagree with me because most of them are so overpaid it's obscene. Take a look at disc jockeys who got lucky, who are talk show hosts. They never went to college. They make millions of dollars a year, dumb as a doorpost. Let's say their last job was putting up wallboard. I have nothing against men who could put up plasterboard. I think it's a noble trade. But how do you translate putting up plasterboard with a hammer to going to work as a talk show host and pretending you know what you're talking about, making $10, $20 million a year? So you say, well, all right, should they be limited? Well, I don't know. Are they working for a public company? Talent is another story. Maybe people should say I should be limited in what I earn. But in a sense, I don't work for a public company when you think about it. I bargain for my income according to the competitive nature of the business at the time I negotiated it. Now, admittedly, things have changed and things change along with it. I understand that. But we're looking at public companies. And the communist government of Obama now wants to cap executive pay. On the face of it, it's a populist notion because most people don't make those kinds of dollars. And we know most of them are crooks who rob the companies blind while firing people. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, let's be very honest. If a company lost $200 million in a quarter and the schmuck made $200,000 a day, how does that figure out? Why, if a company lost money, doesn't the executive not get paid? That's something I could never understand. In other words, the company's making billions of dollars. You can say, oh, I could justify him making whatever he made, up to a certain point, by the way, with a limit on that. There should be some kind of percentile cap on the amount that any of these gangsters can steal from the public company. But when they lose money because of mismanagement or whatever, they should lose money along with it. When the company loses money, they should actually lose money. They should have to pay it back. Why? Because if you're a businessman running, let's say, a stationery store somewhere, I'm coming up with a business that doesn't even exist. Let me pick a different business for today. You're an American. Let's see. I don't know what business. Okay, you're an American. You own a pawn shop. That's something that you could still own in America. We still make some of the best pornography in the world, I understand. Let's say you're an American. You own a pornography store, a corner porno store near a school, near a Boy Scout club, and near a church. You know, an average American mom-and-pop porno store. And you know, should your salary be capped, your income? No, we're not talking about capping the income of porn store owners or anything like that. Or let's say a muffler shop. Let's be serious. I'm just trying to get your attention. Let's say you own a muffler shop. If there's still such thing as a family muffler shop, there has to be somewhere in Arkansas one family muffler shop left, as opposed to the chain stores where the parts come from Korea. As a result of the 3rd Avenue L and then the Navy ships being melted down into mufflers. And do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you think that Schumer is at all? Play Schumer again with that voice of his. That alone has got Q factor.
To me, it's plainly unacceptable at a time when the American public is being asked to spend hundreds of billions of dollars.
All right, we got the picture, Bigfoot. Now, if you're so interested, Schumer, in controlling executive compensation, then why don't you start by controlling Representative Jack Murtha's pork barrel spending? And while you're at it, why don't you go up to Harlem and ask yourself how the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee can get away with what he's getting away with while Bernie Kerik is rotting in jail for getting some fakakta job done in his condominium by a contractor? How could Bernie Kerik be in jail when all he did was have somebody do like a little wallpaper work and a little plumbing? He's in jail? And the guy in the House Ways and Means Committee is not even being investigated? And Al Sharpton, who went down there and screamed that white men should go to jail for a crime that didn't even happen? And Al Sharpton is still called Reverend on Fox News? Tell me about justice in the world. There is none. There is no justice. And this goes to the heart of the Fabian utopists running America today. They want a perfect world where everything is equal and everything is good. Now, this is perhaps a noble goal, but they really ought to clean up their own act first. Let us start with the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Then let's look at Barney Frank, who virtually bankrupted the entire banking industry by forcing private banks to lend money to unqualified illegal immigrants and minorities, primarily. That started the downfall of the entire mortgage industry. I know about the whole redlining. I studied it. I talked about it in 2005. I said it's going to result in the catastrophic wreckage of our banking system because the government started to force the banks to give money to unqualified borrowers, including illegal aliens. Banks were not even allowed to ask about their so-called citizenship status. They were just forced to turn over the money so that everybody could buy a house on the assumption that it was good for the economy and that mortgage bankers who were bundling the money into fiduciary instruments that nobody had ever heard of before simply so they can continue to trade these fiduciary instruments for profit on each trade, which had nothing to do with reality. Why doesn't Schumer address the obscene profits that were made by his friends on Wall Street in addition to these people in public companies? Now, before I take my first break, and I know that was a lot of words, but then again, you'll have to forgive me. I am not Katie Couric, Shepard Smith, or Larry King. Larry King graduated Lafayette High School. So I speak sometimes with too many words. I understand that. You'll have to forgive me for my hyper-education. When I come back, I have studies in my hand. Yes, actual studies, Larry, that were done going back to 1940 all the way up to the present, that shows total compensation of the top three executives of public companies over these years. And you're not going to believe what has happened in this country. Let's forget 1940 because, you know, you're talking war years. Well, let's start in 1970. 1970 to now, you see a graph that goes through the roof in terms of executive compensation of the three highest paid officers in the largest 50 firms in the United States of America. And you see the compensation in terms of salary bonuses, long-term bonuses, and stock options. And you see a jump between 1970 and now that's something like 1,000%. Why? Because the gangsters took over the businesses. And by the way, before I take my first break, I got my first copy in my hands just now from Federal Express of my new book, Banned in Britain. It's gorgeous. Listen, that's how heavy it is. I got such a kick out of this book. You know, the first of anything is always the greatest. The first love, the first pizza, the first coffee, the first time you smell a rose, the first puppy. And as old as I am, the first copy of any book I've written gives me the same kick as any of those. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so.
You say, well, okay, how could you be on the side of Charles Schumer and those calling for a cap on pay on public companies? The answer is because there has to be a limit somewhere. And if you look at the obscenity of the payment that they've taken for themselves over the last few years, proportionate now, forget to the regular average Joe, proportionate to what public companies once paid their top executives, and I don't mean in 1910, as near as 1970. Then you see what happened in 1980. Then once Clinton came to power and he ripped away all of the controls over Wall Street, the pay went through the roof. It was Clinton who did it. It was the Democrats originally who started this obscene roller coaster of raping the public companies through executive salary bonuses, bonus payment, stock options. So I'm saying, sure, there has to be some kind of rational limitation here, but why limit it to that? Why not start with Jack Murtha's pork barrel grants and, excuse me, spending with defense spending? Why not then go up to Harlem and look at the gentleman who runs the Ways and Means Committee, Mr. Rangel? Then start looking around the others in Congress who have enriched their friends. I mean, where does this end is the question. I've heard someone say, well, what about NFL stars or movie stars? They're not working for public companies in the same way as an executive is. You could argue they are. The NFL is a franchise and it's a public corporation, I believe. A movie company is certainly a public corporation. You could say, well, an actor is really, in a way, like an executive. You could argue that an actor is like an executive, and their wages should be limited. I would say that's up to the company. The age of bidding any amount of money for this drug addict to get up there and make believe they're intelligent or noble is long over. I mean, I need them to show me what a hero is when most of them are not heroes. It's the opposite. You know, I know most heroes don't look like that. The real heroes I met usually are portly guys. If you walked over past them in the street, you never even noticed. These are the guys who dragged their comrades away from flaming wreckages in Vietnam and burnt their hands, for example, under enemy fire. Ordinary-looking guys. They don't look like the metrosexuals in Hollywood. We understand that. It goes back to Rock Hudson and even before him. Incidentally, speaking about the metrosexuals and their behavior, and there's a new study out that says marijuana is linked to men's sex health. I couldn't resist looking at this. It says men who smoke pot regularly may want to put down the reefer. New research out of Australia shows a link between pot smoking and sexual health problems for men. What are the problems? According to the study, men who smoke pot daily are four times more likely to have trouble climaxing than men who aren't lighting up. So they called 8,600 people ages 16 to 64, blah, blah, blah. And the findings suggest these men don't see this as a sexual health problem and that they may actually be using the cannabis to actually delay their orgasm. You hear this? Now, wait, it even gets more interesting. While many pothead men may be having sexual problems, the study also found that they have more partners than non-pot smokers. So, in other words, the potettes are right along there with them. Monday in the U.S., the Justice Department told federal prosecutors that targeting people who use or provide medical marijuana in strict compliance with state laws was not a good use of their time. In other words, Obama now wants more men not to climax. You could also turn that into a headline, let's say, if you're at Fox News. I'm joking. Come on. No, I'm saying you want to get into yellow journalism. You could say Obama wants men not to climax. I mean, come on. I'm just trying to have a joke here, but you have to have some reasoning capacity in order to understand that you can't be Larry King, Chris Matthews, Shepard Smith, Katie Couric, Brian Williams, or Charles Gibson. After all, they're such advanced journalists. They have such high educations in the junior colleges and the high schools they went to. They are so smart that they don't even need to make jokes anymore. They're beyond jokes. Look at Shepard Smith, who majored in journalism but didn't graduate. Now there's a journalist.
Savage.
American people are a lot more interested in what we're doing to create jobs or how we're handling the situation in Afghanistan. I think that what our advisors simply said is that we are going to take media as it comes. And if media is operating basically as a talk radio format, then that's one thing. And if it's operating as a news outlet, then that's another. But it's not something I'm losing a lot of sleep over.
No, but that's why you've been talking about it for a week straight now. You're not losing sleep over it. Your poll numbers are in the toilet because you started to attack not only conservative talk radio, but then Fox News, and the people don't like it because the majority of voters, in fact, know what you're doing, and you've created an enemies list, which is a disastrous mistake that your college friends talked you into doing. You're surrounded by college friends who don't know the first thing about the real world, Mr. Obama. The fact is that the American people are much smarter than you may think. Now, you say that the news outlet Fox News is more like talk radio than it is like a legitimate news outlet. That is quite astonishing when you consider that you consider CNN with Larry King to be a legitimate news outlet. You consider MSNBC with men who urinate on themselves and people who think that double doses of irony in every statement pass for intelligence. Those are journalists. People who lick your boots are journalists. Stalin would agree with you. Pol Pot would agree with you. Mao Tse-tung would agree with you. Any journalist who didn't lick their boots wound up in an re-education camp or executed. You ought to be thankful that there's a group that's willing to stand up to you for your own good, because you certainly don't want to be remembered as the first American dictator, do you? And if you don't understand what I am saying to you, and that it's actually in your interest as well as the interest of the American people for you to have criticism and critics who know what they're talking about, then we're in worse shape than even I believe we are in. And I'm quite a pessimist when it comes to you, Mr. President. But on the other hand, Mr. President, when you try to smear Fox News by saying they're no more than a talk radio outlet, that's actually quite a compliment when you consider the educational level of Brian Williams at NBC News. For example, he went to Brookdale Community College. He transferred to a Catholic University of America, did not graduate. Instead, Brian Williams took an internship with Jimmy Carter. So that's an example of an NBC News journalist, a college dropout. Or how about Larry King, who graduated Lafayette High School in New York City? That's your idea of a legitimate journalist? Or how about Chris Matthews, who served in the U.S. Peace Corps in Swaziland? Is that your idea of a legitimate journalist, someone who licks your boots day and night and appears on that jerk show in Los Angeles every other night to legitimize the fact that he's nothing but an illegitimate loudmouth? Everybody in the business knows he's just a loudmouth with a motor mouth. I once had that loudmouth on a show when I was a local talk show host. He didn't shut his mouth for 2 seconds, and he was a phony. He was a phony. Came in the studio. He was plugging a book. I had him on Nice Guy before the show. The minute the mic went live, he started screaming at me and yelling and didn't shut his disgusting mouth. I had to look at his false teeth and smell his stinking breath till I threw him out of the studio. That's your idea of a journalist, Mr. President? Or how about, I can go down the list. We can go down the list. How about Charles Gibson of ABC News? Who graduated from Princeton in Princeton, New Jersey, where he was news director of the college radio station. And Gibson planned to go into law, but was turned down by many institutions because his grades were not sufficient for top-tier law school, so he became the next best thing, which was a talker. He's an idea, that's your idea of a journalist? So let's not start throwing brickbats at various news outlets and start saying they're not legitimate, because boy, oh boy, are you opening yourself up to criticism on that one? I mean, who is legitimate in the news? You're telling me there's legitimate news as opposed to opinion? It's all opinion. It's all opinion. Basically, they're taking facts or making them up and then putting out an opinion piece. It is not science. In fact, most science today is opinion. And I know that going back to my early years in graduate school, when one of the greatest scientists I ever had came up to me in a herbarium when I was looking at a plant that was 300 years old, and he pushed it aside on the table. His name was Harold St. John. He was 96 years old, still working. He had done work in Newfoundland like 40 years before. He was like it's an obscure field, admittedly, but it was like working in a monastery. And he pushed aside my herbarium specimens, and he said, "Listen to me, sonny boy." He said, "At a certain point, this is all an art. It's not even a science." He said, "It's true for virtually every science on Earth." I said, "What do you mean, professor?" He said, "What I mean is very simple. At a certain point at the perimeters of scientific inquiry, you have to make the best guess you can." He said, "It's an art at a certain point. It's not a science." So I looked into that question once because I was seeking the truth. The truth. I've always been after like the truth, 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 nothing but the whole truth, and give me the truth, blah, blah, blah. Well, what is the truth? So I started to look into various sciences. There's very little truth in sciences that's provable. Some of it is, some of it isn't. The one science that's almost immutable in its proof is chemistry, which is why Linus Pauling said he went into chemistry. Particularly if you look at the atomic structure of various elements, that's when you find truth, because you can't fudge on those. And that's why he said he went into chemistry, is because he was looking for the truth. And if you look at sulfur, for example, take a compound, sulfur. What's sulfur made of? Well, here are the atoms that sulfur is made of. That's provable. But in terms of whether Obama is a communist, that also is provable. Why? Because if it walks like a communist, talks like a communist, and starts to pass policies like a communist, it is a communist. I know that word is not, fashionable today. It's socialist, but it's not a correct word. Obama is way beyond a mild socialist on the Canadian scale. Obama is a classic Maoist. Just look at the people he's surrounded by. I know he's not wearing the blue hat with the red star yet, but okay, give it time. You know what I mean? Great oaks from little acorns grow. And of course, there have been a lot of little acorns around America, and he's not yet grown into the Mao of his dreams, in my humble paranoid opinion. 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about something far more mundane. I'm sorry to get you off the track on what is true and where is the truth. And let us talk about brass tacks. The brass tacks are executive compensation at public companies is grotesque and obscene. The government, which is socialist, now wants to curtail or limit executive comp at the top 10 or 20 public firms. Knee-jerk conservatives are saying, no, that's not fair. It's a violation of the free market, and it's socialism. Well, it's anything but socialism, frankly. It's not socialism in the truest sense of the word. at all. In fact, it's just rational business practices. I don't know how public companies haven't been able to control I know why public companies have not been able to control executive compensation. It's because the executives of the corporations set the policies which give themselves salaries. How do they do that? Well, there were years ago, there was a move to get compensation committees formed to prevent excesses. Take a guess who handpicked the compensation committees. The CEOs of the companies handpicked their buddies from Wharton or wherever they went. And they said, you're going to be in the compensation committee. I want $100 million a quarter no matter how much I lose. And I'll tell you what, if you let me have that, I'll give you $3 million. Okay, I'll be at the compensation committee. Thank you, Mark. Thanks, Bob. All right, let's not talk. I'm glad you enjoyed dinner. Goodbye. So that's why, because there's no controlling them. And I believe that just as you have to have red lights, green lights, and yellow lights, we need laws and we need controls. And I think that we need to put controls into Congress before we start controlling business. See, that's the caveat of all of this discussion. Before we start controlling executive compensation, which is long overdue with the public companies, we need to start controlling greedy, outright pigs like Jack Murtha, who is rolling in pork. We need to control the vermin who stole $700 billion of TARP money and gave it to their friends on Wall Street. We need to find out where that money went and put him in jail and take the money back for the public good. Now, if you could show me that you're going to get that $700 billion back, which basically only bailed out the Wall Street firms that were friends of Hank Paulson, get the money back and put them in jail, and then take the $700 billion and give everybody a refund, then I'll say you can start controlling executive compensation at corporations, Mr. Schumer. Okay, let's do what's fair is fair here. I hear the applause. Thank you for the applause. I can hear it in my ears. I have a fifth sense, which is why I'm great in radio. And again, no, I can hear you. There's actually you have to have a slightly like a wacky view of the world to do this job right. You literally have to feel when the audience is reacting to you without seeing them. If you can't do that, then you have to be in television with a laugh machine and smoke a lot of pot and live on Sunset Boulevard and think that you're clever because you have Alec Baldwin on every other night talking about how great he is, even though he can't make probably... I don't think Alec Baldwin's making $12,000 a year anymore. That's why he's on Bill Maher's show every other night. It's unbelievable to me where all of these has-beens go. It's like the elephant's burial ground. Bill Maher's show is becoming like the elephant's burial ground. Every loser in the entertainment and media business winds up on his show. Who? Why is that schmuck Chris Matthews on the show every other night with a big stupid fake smile? Because no one believes a word the guy says. And he's a pimp, frankly, for the Obama administration. It's frankly disgusting. Called for a CO2 cartridge in Rush Limbaugh's head last week and nothing happened to him and he's not banned in Britain? Oh, my God, what a double standard. A definitive book about how the right for free speech and how one man stood firm against an entire government to free his name from a list of murderers and terrorists. This is the first copy of my book, Banned in Britain, Michael Savage Beating the Liberal Blacklist. I still get a kick out of it. It is a beautiful book. Using historical perspective, Dr. Savage reminds us of both our recent and distant pasts, drawing comparisons with Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, Castro's Cuba, and how these failed and murderous aspirations began exactly how we in America are beginning, .. Dr. Michael Savage has become a multimedia icon in the conservative movement, heard by 10 million listeners each week on The Michael Savage Show and syndicated across the United States in over 300 markets. He is also the author of 25 books, including 4 New York Times bestsellers, yet he is banned in Britain and banned at Fox News. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Marijuana linked to men's sex health. All right, that's just to get you to listen. It's Friday afternoon. We're talking about executive compensation. The communists want to cap executive pay. I'm somewhat in agreement with them. Not because I believe in government control of business at all. It's just that there's no control whatsoever over these public companies because gangsters have taken them over. I don't care whether they wear a white shirt and tie. What does it matter? What, before they did this, they're probably in a drug business, half of them. What do you think, because they went to Wharton, they're not capable of thievery? If they're that smart, they wind up a Treasury Secretary. If you're a big enough crook, you wind up the Treasury Secretary. You know, you tell the kid steals a necklace from a store. Well, that's not the right thing to do if you own a store. It costs you money. But if you're a really smart thief, you wind up not only stealing the necklace from the store, You steal from the store itself. Then you move up. Then you're first noticed by a congressman. If you can actually steal a store from an owner and pay nothing down and take it away from the owner and leave them broken in the street, then you come to the attention of your local congressman. Then if you can steal a chain of stores, then you come to the attention of a senator. Then already you're they're interested in your business acumen. They want to know, where'd you go to school that you knew how to take away a whole chain from somebody without having worked? If you could get away with stealing several chains of businesses from somebody through as an investment banker, then you're ready to become either labor secretary or treasury secretary. And if you're better than that even, there's no limit to what you can become, even president. New York City, WOR, Paul, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this is going to ensure failure. No way about it. You're paying one employee X amount of dollars to do the same business another employee is doing at another firm, and he's making three times X. There's no reason for anybody to stick around that firm. So in the short run...
Well, let's deal with that rationally. I've heard that argument, Paul, but here's the problem. My S detector is going off because I used to hear that during the years that I was interested in the university, that the professors, most of whom were deadbeats, particularly in the social sciences, they would say, well, if we don't get compensation, we're going to go into private industry. Well, there were no jobs in private industry for the professors to begin with, and nobody would hire them because they didn't have the skills. Where are all the jobs for these executives who would be leaving the public companies? Where would they go?
It's going to happen here. They're either going to go to the competition, a lot of them, or these guys are such high talent at the executive level, they open up their own shop, and they become their own shop, and sooner or later, 10 years down the road, they're employing people worldwide.
Wait. What do you mean they're going to go to another company? But where are they going to go and make the kind of money they're making at the corporation? Let's say they're in the top 10 corporations. What's the average compensation today?
I'm saying talent costs money. If you're not talented...
But, Paul, you know, we're trying to get a dollar value. What are they earning? What are the top executives making in the top 10 companies, roughly, as a CEO?
$3 million.
That's all they're making? That's all the guys are making is $3 million to run a top 10 corporation? That's all they're making is $3 million? I'm serious now. I'm not being sarcastic. You're telling me that includes salary bonuses, long-term bonus, and stock options? They're only making $3 million a year?
I'm saying with some of them, they are. Not all of them make $20 million a year. These are big guys that have international, they have huge market shares. Their numbers as a percentage...
Well, $3 million a year is certainly not too high a number. Believe me, I understand what money is today. That's not a lot of money, truthfully. I understand that. That's the price of an average house in some communities in America, even in this market. So where are the guys who took out hundreds of millions of dollars over the last few years? Where did they go?
Well, you know, the shareholders put the board of directors in, and the board of directors manage the managers, and that includes executive compensation.
No, but what about the kinds of numbers we were hearing about since 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9, where executives are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year in between their stock options and bonuses? Where do they go?
Now, listen, there's another thing out there. Don't forget, there's layers. There's stratus layers of this economic situation. There's people who sell yachts and real estate over $100 million and luxury items. These people employ a lot of people. This is part of a robust economy. This isn't like baseball.
Well, you know, you still didn't answer my question. Maybe you can't hear it because of radio, and I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. What about executives who were making hundreds of millions of dollars in 06, 7, 8, and 9? Where have they? And 08, where are they today?
Of America.
Okay. Can you hear a word I'm saying?
Absolutely, and I don't agree with it.
But you didn't hear me. I asked a question. Where are the guys who made hundreds of millions of dollars in 07, 08, 06, 07, and 08? Where did they go? Where are they today?
A lot of these guys are sitting right now, and they're sitting on ideas, getting ready to come out of the woodwork and make many, many mega millions down the road. That's where they're sitting. That's what talent does. It just doesn't go on vacation or just isn't lazy.
Yeah, but you're lecturing me like I don't know anything about money. I mean, I wish we could have a real conversation about money, and not only how much I make, but what I also understand about business. And I don't go for it because a lot of these guys are deadbeat crooks. Don't tell me that corporation wouldn't run because the guy at the top didn't make $200 million. How could they make $200 million when they fired 30,000 people? And I could cite five different cases over the last 5 years of guys who came in and fired 40,000 people and then took a $300 million bonus for themselves for firing all those people. They called that a plus. How is that possible?
They'll be hired back, these people, in a short period of time, whether it's 6 months, 18 months.
they will come back into the workforce as the cycle comes back up. This is
they will come back in the workforce? Then that's why our unemployment now is over 10%? Well, let's go to Wall Street. What about when those companies, Bear Stearns, went out of business? Was it Bear Stearns that was bankrupted by Paulson?
Listen, I was in the mortgage business for 25 years in New Jersey, and I got audited all the time, and you couldn't do anything. So when you see Madoff and all these other people, somebody else is in on this because they should be. The auditors are there. The enforcement's not going on.
Well, now we're talking about something we both agree with, but that's not the same thing as executive compensation at the top 10 companies. And again, I'm wanting to focus on the men who took out hundreds of millions of dollars a year, you know, 5, 6, 7, and 8, simply for firing 40, 50,000 people out of public corporations. They didn't make a profit by creating a new widget. They didn't create a new product. They didn't create a new service. They fired 40,000 workers. And then they juggled the books by showing less of a loss, not even a gain. And for doing so, they took $200 million, $300 million for that year, if not more. I'd like to know if you think that that's fair, okay? Well, the answer is of course not. New York, WOR, Rich, quickly fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You're the reason, sole reason, the president's ratings are plummeting and the government's ratings are plummeting. I wanted to thank you.
Well, how could I be the sole reason? He doesn't even mention my name. He says it's all to do with Fox News.
Well, they're attacking you and trying to get, they banned you in Britain. They're doing it during a...
Well, I think I speak more to the unaffiliated listener than any other person in the American media. I would say that as an iconoclast and a guy sort of on the outside, I would think I speak to 30% of the educated electorate in this country. I think they listen to me. People who listen to me don't even tune into any other show on AM radio. I know that for a fact. I'm the only reason that they turn into AM FM radio to begin with. So it could be. Thank you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Plainly unacceptable at a time when the American public is being asked to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out major institutions and trillions more to stabilize the financial system, that these institutions would turn around and reward the very same executives that many of whom created the current crisis.
We've got Schumer out there saying, I want to regulate pay at all publicly traded companies. So when the threat is, how far does this go?
Well, that's scary. And I think then even I would start saying this is socialism and, you know, very, very negative.
I'm all over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come all over, baby.
Let's pick, Phil.
Baby,
there is a whole lot of shaking going on. There's a whole lot of shaking going on. When you got Murtha in Congress steering millions of dollars to his cronies, and you got the bull under the bailout in the form of the GAO questioning whether the bailout saved anything other than the jobs of greedy Wall Street executives to the tune of $700 billion, and then you got Schumer getting up there and grandstanding and saying that we need to cap the pay of the CEOs of the top, whatever, 20 corporations or 10, you start to ask yourself questions. Now, of course, I began the show by saying to you, I actually agree in principle that CEOs' pay must be capped, particularly in light of the fact that we have no compensation in terms of reality anymore in the United States of America. It's proportionate to the earnings. Let's put it to you that way. So you have to say it's relative to what? It's relative to reality. In other words, let's look at the graph of actual total compensation of salary bonuses, long-term bonuses, and stock option grants of the CEOs of the top companies in America going back to 1970. And suddenly you see the graph jumping by about 80% by 1980. By 1990, it jumps about 300%. I'm talking from 1970. All of a sudden, by the year 2000, it jumps something like 1,000%. And all of a sudden, between the year 2000 and now, it must jump up 5,000%. So you can't say that the total compensation in the firm relative to its market value and sales is why the money went up like that. The fact of the matter is, a lot of the value of these firms didn't actually go up. It was all based on speculation. And so the CEOs were not producing any additional services or products. They were simply manipulating the books and taking money out of that accordingly. Or they were firing 30, 40, 50,000 employees. And instead of making money, they were just saving loss of money. And they were saying that that was a plus. So in that regard, yeah, let's make it a level playing field. Let's start by looking at the gentleman from Harlem, who's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and start with reigning in his excesses. Then let's go to Jack Murtha and go into the kind of money he's steering to pet firms. Then you can look at private corporations or public corporations. Now, what has CEO compensation actually been? Let's look at the numbers. Larry Ellison, Oracle, $556 million. Ellison, Oracle, $556 million for the year. Number two is Ray Irani, Occidental Petroleum. That's Al Gore's old friends. $222 million. You didn't know that Al Gore was related to Occidental Petroleum. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the hidden story of Al Gore's obsession with CO2 and coal. That's because Daddy Gore, ex-Senator Gore, worked for Occidental Coal for many years for Arm & Hammer. And as head of Occidental Coal, he put out an awful lot of carbon into the atmosphere. So to make up for it, the son, Al, has somewhat of a complex. So he's anti-carbon, but he figured, look, he may as well make money coming into the carbon business when the coal is being burnt. He's making more money, in other words, on carbon, on the carbon scam, than his father made on the carbon produced by coal. Think about the genius of this family. You wouldn't believe it. A man who sweats this much while speaking makes this much money. And not a month ago, he got a $580 million grant from the government, or loan, excuse me, from the Obama administration to build a hybrid car in Norway. That's terrific. Number three, John Hess made $154 million. Michael Watford, Ultra Petroleum, made $116 million. I don't know who these guys are. I never heard of them. None of these names are American and they ring a bell. David O'Reilly, no relationship to the leprechaun of Chevron, made $47 million. Boy, that must make the lep really angry. He's so smart. And he got all of those pretty women around him talking about breast implants, and he still makes less than his namesake. Now, there's no one on the list I recognize here. McClendon, Ryan, Carey, Williams, Atkinson, Rowe, Roberts. So they make, a lot of them are in energy businesses. Lockheed Martin, Robert Stevens made $42 million. You know, do you want to limit their income? Did they earn the money? Should there be caps on the income of these guys? The arguments are that if you cap it, they're going to go to other companies. Well, what other companies? They're all going to move to Zurich? Where are they moving where the jobs are? I keep hearing they're going to move to another company. As I say, it's the same rubbish I heard when the university professors weren't making enough money, so they said they wanted a raise because they needed more money to see less students in order to take more trips to visit the brothels of Thailand on investigations of various things. So they said, unless we get ample compensation at Harvard and Berkeley, we're going to leave for private industry. That's why Robert Reich, the former labor secretary, is now at Berkeley. His idea of private industry is to move from Boston to Berkeley to get another job in the university. What private industry is going to hire Robert Reich? They don't make your desk small enough for him, number one. But number two, what can he do? He hasn't produced anything in his entire life. I produce things. I produce a great show that the people like, and they wouldn't listen to us. They don't have to listen to me, unlike professors. Kids have to listen to them. I have a worker for me. I'm not going to mention her name. I better be careful. So she's an archivist for me. We'll leave it at that. And she's finishing up a degree in communications at a local Bay Area university. That's, of course, an oxymoron. And one of her courses is in radio journalism. So I said, is it a professor who knows nothing about radio? She said, Dr. Savage, it's worse than that. He talks about his drug usage daily, not about radio at all. And that's a tenured professor. So you're gonna, he's going to take a job in the private sector. The guy couldn't even get a job as a radio sweeper if they threw him out of the university. You know, get me started. If you ever made me the educations of the universities are, of public universities, I could save public universities billions of dollars a year. I'd close down 40% of the departments, which are worthless. I would close down 35% of the universities around America, which are redundant. I would leave the junior colleges in business and some of the four-year colleges, and you'd suddenly see an education that was worth something all over again. But don't get me started. Here's another story on the Savage Nation. Obama says that his czars will not testify before Congress. Did you hear this one? All the communists, Maoists, and Leninists will not be forced to testify before Congress. Senators said it goes against the president's promises of transparency and openness and treads on Congress's constitutional mandate to investigate the administration's actions. No kidding. And by the way, even a Democrat senator is saying the czars need to be testifying before Congress. But Obama said, no, that's why I appointed them, basically. I don't want you to know who they are and what their agendas might be. You hear this? And so we're being distracted again. The communists are doing their planning behind the scenes. They're revising our life as we talk, and we're arguing over executive compensation. You think I don't know it? What do you think? I don't know what's going on. Is it all a distraction? Is there any reason that I lay awake at night thinking about these things? You know what I'm going to do now? It's Friday. I'm going to burn up if I keep this up. I'm going to burn up. I got the first copy in my hand, Banded Britain. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's hardcover. Dr. Savage holds a master's degree in medical botany and a second in medical anthropology, where he earned his Ph.D. from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and nutrition sciences. Savage is an ardent conservationist dedicated to his family and a proud patriot of his country. That's why he was banned in Britain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Millions of Americans, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, are worried about liberal social policies and runaway federal spending, deficit, and debt. So to my friends in the so-called mainstream media, I say, conservative talk show hosts may not speak for everybody, but they speak for more Americans than you do.
We're not going to be a party of angry white guys. We're going to be a party of center-right politics.
Grifters that no one will vote for. So one has it right and the other has it wrong. Representative Mike Pence, a Republican of Indiana, defends talk radio, while Lindsey Graham, the former, he's still a trial lawyer, says that the Republican Party will not be the party of angry white guys. Well, my friend Lindsey Graham, then you're going to be a party of one, because there's nobody going to be left. All the other people are voting for Obama. So what are these people, stupid? They're out of control. I mean, they're out of touch with reality. What are you going to do something new about that? That's why they went into politics. Marijuana linked to men's sex health, we already did. Here's an interesting story from my website. Chavez limits citizens' showers to 3 minutes. You talk about Obamacare. Some people sing in the shower half an hour, said Chavez the dictator. No, kids, 3 minutes is more than enough. I've counted 3 minutes and I don't stink. Well, some would argue, but anyway, can you imagine a government saying that you have to limit your showers to 3 minutes? And what are they going to do, hire shower police that come out of Harvard with a green degree, and they'll go into your toilet and time you while you're showering? Yes, that's of course what they'll do, more government jobs. Grocery clerk denied a break and urinated on herself in San Francisco, and she gets a $200,000 damage award. A supermarket clerk who urinated on herself at the checkout counter after her supervisor refused to let her take a bathroom break is entitled to a $200,000 damage award. P.S. She's from El Salvador, here illegally. Isn't America grand? You know, they used to say that in America the streets are paved with gold. That's because the streets are paved with yolds. That's old German for stupid fools. New York City, W.O.R. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you are the uncle that every college student needs right now, and it's very important in a relativistic society that people such as myself, people who are in the university, hear your voice. And I do want to thank you for that very much.
Well, I exist. I exist because you listen. Remember that, John. It's because of listeners like you that I exist at all. If I didn't have an audience, I wouldn't be in business. So I have to provide you with some kind of service. Isn't that correct?
That is. And I was fortunate. I had a mother and two uncles who always nabbed me ever since the age that I can remember. If I brought up any dumb topic and took a side that made absolutely no sense at all, they were there, and they were going to put me in line. And at the time, I hated it, but now I kind of see that it's kind of working out pretty well. So, I mean, I listen to you as much as I can, and I just might...
I'm like the radio Dutch uncle, John.
You are the uncle.
All right, John, thank you. I'm here for you. Now, there's an article you can't miss on my website, please. It's an editorial from the Washington Examiner, Uncovering the Bull Under the Bailout. And it's about the $700 billion bailout last year under TARP money. And it was basically lending decisions that were given to nine Wall Street giants: Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, State Street, and the Bank of New York Mellon. The bailout was essential to save the nation from a complete economic meltdown. So said President Bush. So said Treasury Secretary Harry Paulson. So said Harry Reid, and so said Nancy Pelosi. They say 1 year later, however, a little-known report by the U.S. GAO, that's a neutral group, Government Accountability Office, questions whether the bailout, officially known as TARP, saved anything other than the jobs of greedy Wall Street executives and the political hides of their protectors in government. Did you hear this? At the height of the bailout hysteria, Paulson, remember Paulson? They'd ask him where the money went. Well, Secretary, we asked you a simple question. Where'd the money go? Like Brer Rabbit, like Bugs Bunny. He goes on Face the Nation saying he hoped the federal government would be able to recoup most of the TARP funds. But today, both the GAO's auditors and TARP Inspector General Neil Barofsky say nobody should hold their breath waiting for that repayment. And they try to reach, and no one could find him. Nobody knows where he is. So they say, there you have it. Treasury officials lied to Congress and the public and refused to demand even a basic level of accountability from TARP recipients while borrowing hundreds of billions of dollars that taxpayers will eventually have to pay back plus billions in interest. Just Wednesday, Obama announced a new TARP-like program for small businesses and community banks now. They conclude by saying the madness in Washington won't stop until the people completely clean house at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. Good luck, Charlie. Good luck, Charlie. You're going to clean house? Come on, you think it's a... Look, in some ways, there's nothing new under the sun. In other ways, it's by degree. Let's put it to you that way. The way I see, I'm a cynic. I've been cynical since I'm about 8, 9 years old because I had a cynical upbringing. My father was an immigrant, hardworking. He didn't trust politicians. He didn't trust authority. Unfortunately, that was passed on to me at age 8. And so, therefore, I've never really believed in politicians. And unfortunately, the reality has come to prove me right. And my father may rest in peace. I have a picture of him I keep. Dad, thank you very much. He's been gone since 1970. Here he is smiling down upon me in the studio, standing there smiling like he's alive, next to a little hotel in the Catskill Mountains and one of the rare breaks he had from his 8-day-a-week business that he had, a little business, taking a little break. God bless him. But he used to teach me things when I was young. And one of the things he taught me was, he said, look, Michael, here's the way the country works. I must have been 7, 8, walking in the, Ludlow Street down in the Lower East Side on the way to Katz's to poison my arteries. I needed an early start on occluding my arteries. So I was going to get a French fries the size of an arm. I don't know what they cooked it in, rendered fat, probably from Buffalo, New York, by way of Krakow. I don't know where they got the grease from. And corned beef, I never saw anything like it. You know, if you'd ask Feline, the guy behind the counter would look at you with the sharpener and the knife like he was going to kill you. If you'd say, I want it lean, they'd look at you like, A, you're insane, because who wants meat that's lean? What, are you crazy? What, are you some kind of sissy? You don't eat fat? What's wrong with you? Aren't you a real man? You don't eat pure fat sandwiches? That's the way we did it in the old country when we lived to the age of, 30. Lived to the age of Alexander the Great, 30. So we go down there, and he would, I say, how does the system work, Daddy? He said, basically, it's two bands of thieves, Republicans and Democrats. And he said, but it's actually a genius system, because what happens is, if the Democrats are in power, the other band of thieves who are out of power criticize them mercilessly while they're out of power. And they point out the thievery and the excesses and the crookedness of the other party that's in power. Then after a number of years, the schmuck public gets fed up with the party in power. Well, we're going to throw those bums out. Look at them Republicans, those crooks. Let's put that Obama in. Then the Democrats come and he says, then they become a bigger band of crooks. Then the guys that got thrown out of with just the crooks start to scream, look at that, look what they're robbing, the top money they took. I never saw anything like it. And he said, it works in a strange way. That was then, this is now. The level of thievery, Dad, is much
Savage.
Different.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of. Oh, can't you see? You're the only girl for
me. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, where true American music is played.
Please be my
when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. That's the era I'm from. Sorry if I offend you in some way. I'm not from MSNBC, where they have no chrome, and let's not even finish the rest of the sentence. Have any women on MSNBC? Oh, my God. Who's that creature that was married to the FCC head? She's like the creature from the Black Lagoon. I've never seen anything like her. How does she stay on the air? My God. That woman has ratings? She makes my flesh crawl. And by the way, speaking about executive compensation and such, how come no one ever looks into the FCC chairman and the Treasury secretaries and how much they robbed and gave their friends and whatever? If so, we're not accusing anyone of that, of course. They take those jobs because it's public service. They do it for a dollar a year. No. Ice skating bear kills Russian circus hand. Ah, oh, sad. A bear and ice skates attacked two people during rehearsals at a circus in Bishkek, the capital of Kyrgyzstan, killing one of them. Kyrgyzstan officials said Friday. In the incident which happened Thursday, the five-year-old animal killed the circus administrator Dmitry Potapov, a Malden animal trainer who was attempting to rescue him. It's not really funny. I mean, aside from I can't announce these cities in Russia. The incident occurred during a rehearsal by the Russian state circus company Troop, which was performing in Bishkek with the program Bears on Ice. Ministry of Culture and Information Director Kurmagzi Iznyakhev told reporters. It is unclear what caused the bear to attack Potapov, 25, nearly severing one of his legs while dragging... Oh, come on, let's stop this. Medical personnel were unable to save Potapov, who died at the scene. Well, I'm sorry the guy got hurt. Let's stop right there. I'm not into training bears to ride on a motorcycle, to ice skate, and to play hockey. Okay, maybe the Russians can move into the 1940s. You know, that's before people had any awareness that animals had, you know, like emotions. You know, maybe the Russian society can move up a little bit, maybe to the 18th century. Even to Tsarist Russia, at least. Well, what are you training a bear to run around on ice skates? Eventually, the thing's going to go crazy. Probably could have been a pay dispute, for all I know. Maybe they withheld berries or something. You know, things are bad in Russia right now. They didn't give him enough, blueberries in his meal. I told you, I want 2 pounds of blueberries a day, or you never know what's going to happen. All right, yeah, all right. Here you go. Here's the half a pound of blueberries that your father got. And you're lucky to have that. If you only know what it was like in this circus in the 1920s, people didn't even get blueberries. You stupid bear, you. Now take it and forget it. All right, I'm warning you. I'm warning you. You cut back on those blueberries. You keep putting that Prozac in my pablum. You just don't know what could happen. All right, get back in the cage. We'll see you at the circus, okay? I mean, so they cut back on the blueberries, and that's what happened. There was blueberry bear compensation problems there in Russia. Here's another crazy, insane Maoist lunatic in the U.S. government named Sunstein, a schmuck of the highest order who was capable only of working at Harvard University in the law department, probably never conducted a trial in his life. I'm not even talking about a lawyer. This guy is just a law professor, which don't confuse a law professor with a lawyer. At least a lawyer provides a service. This guy worked in Harvard. That shows you how stupid he was to begin with. He was so dumb that Obama picked him to become a czar of something. Now he urges to abolish marriage. Came out in World Net Daily today. Did they make it up? No, they read the guy's book. He says, abolish marriage, says Sunstein. Have you ever seen anything like these people? He said, the U.S. government should abolish its sanctioning of marriage, argued Cass Sunstein, President Obama's so-called regulatory czar. Sunstein proposed that the concept of marriage should become privatized. Ah, come on. See, I'm one of the few people in media who's actually read Das Kapital by Karl Marx. Now, let me explain something to you. I'm not going to give you the whole story because it's boring. That theory was well beyond economic theory. Das Kapital by Karl Marx, the father of the Marx brothers and Marxism. In it, Karl Marx explained that the bourgeois concept of marriage had to go. The whole concept of family had to go, according to Karl Marx, in order to make a new society. So everywhere you turn, every day, you find another Marxist inside the White House. So even Democrats are starting to wake up, and they say, well, we want to call him before Congress for a hearing, and Obama says, no, yet. No, no, my czars are sacred. My czars no report to Congress. Who do you think you are, Congress? So Obama says, who do you think you are, Congress? You're acting like Congress. There is no Congress. There is only I. There's the royal I, and there are my czar, Tsar Nikolai. There's only I. Ay, ay, ay. I am so great. I am Obama the Great. My wife was with the hula hoop on the lawn, and that's considered exercise. After eating 16 plates of ice cream. Tomato is a ketchup, is a vegetable. Ketchup is a vegetable. You're lucky you'll have ketchup when I get through with you. All right, Turner, they got the joke. They got the joke. You got it's all about timing. And at a certain point, it's not funny anymore. The inner ear hears all. I know what you hear. If I don't hear what you hear, I'm out of business. Then I start to sound like one of the people on MSNBC who thinks the double irony in every statement makes them sound intelligent because they still think they're in the college dorm, you know? Have you ever listened to that hag, that unisexual pad on MSNBC? I never saw anything like it. Every word out of her mouth is like a double ironic statement about irony. And like, you know how funny I am because I'm ironic, like in a sorority, you know? How can they get away with this with light bulbs controlling the income? Cap and trade. So we're talking about capping income. We're talking about bears. We're talking about extinct Republicans like Lindsey Graham. Listen to, again, to clip five, the extinct Republican Party.
We're not going to be a party of angry white guys. We're going to be a party of center-right politics.
Duh. You're going to be a party of center-right grifters. You're not a party of anything but grifting, Lindsey. I was on to you a long time ago. We knew who you were about 2 years ago under Bush when you came out in favor against tort reform because you're one of them. You're one of the tots, Lindsey, who doesn't want tort reform. So the minute I heard he was a trial lawyer, I knew already we're in for the long Republican Party, a party of lawyers. You hear this? I think it's a requirement that you have no law degree to become a politician. Anyone with a law degree is excluded because they're only going to manipulate. They don't stand for any truth. Did you know what shocked me when I was young? I think it was in a movie. I don't know where I learned this, but there was a line in a book or a movie where there's a young idealistic guy who becomes a lawyer, and he sees the lies in the courtroom, and the judge is paid off or whatever. And at the end, he goes up to the lawyer who just won this case sort of in a corrupt manner, and he says to his boss, blah, blah, blah. And the boss says, don't confuse law with justice. It stuck with me forever. And now we have a lawyer for president who is giving us neither justice nor peace. And I say no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. To give it back to them. I say no justice, no peace. So keep going to those town hall meetings, which already they canceled. Keep sending those letters to the defunct dead letter boxes of Congress. And I guarantee you'll wind up a bear in a circus on ice skates. Sacramento, Mariah, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Uncle Savage. I was in...
I like that. I want everyone to call me Uncle Michael from now on, just for a while, for a couple of days. Yes, what's on your mind?
I was in the Soviet Union in December of 1978, and I went to the Moscow Circus. And I know why that bear mauled that man. They put them in these little bitty skates, and they beat them with metal rods.
Oh, they're monsters. It's the same in the China where they torture animals, then they eat them. They torture dogs. Do you know that in China they kill a dog while it's alive? They kill it. They eat it. They boil it alive. Do you know that? Because the meat is considered fresher. Do you know that they raise the most beautiful dogs in the world, St. Bernards, in cages just to eat them in China? Did you know that?
I did know that. But did you know this? That
no.
In China they have like a big arena with these lions in them, and they have... pens of sheeps and chickens, and when the kids and the people come in, they pick a chicken or they pick a sheep, and then they bind it up and tie it on the end of a rod, a big plank, and they dangle it in front of the lions. And
well, let me ask you something. Take children being raised like that with no conscience and a vicious delight in murder, and pit them against American schoolboys who are riding skateboards on Ritalin. Tell me who wins the war.
There isn't a chance.
Tell me who wins the war. The long-haired hippie kid on a BMX bicycle in a skate park at 14 on marijuana whose mother's become a Buddhist overnight, whose father left for another man, or the kid raised to dangle a chicken in front of a lion?
They're thrilled about it. They love it. They're laughing.
Oh, sure, because everyone has bloodlust in them. That's right. Everyone knows that. And, of course, in America, if you show any sign of masculinity, it's treated as a disease. The same way childbirth has been turned into a medical condition instead of an actual natural process, they've turned manhood itself or testosterone into a dangerous chemical. Thanks for feminism. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What do you mean you're not going to be the party of angry white guys? That's your base, you Schmendrick. What do you mean center-right politics? The only people who believe in center-right politics are angry white guys. I mean, other than another percent of other people. What are you talking about? It just shows you why the Republican Party is as extinct as a dodo bird. They're out of business. You know, I have to take responsibility for it in a way. I don't know if I should say that, but you could argue that I disenfranchised 30% of the electorate over the last 15 years by pointing out the shenanigans of both parties, and I greatly magnify the already growing independent movement in this country. And in so doing, basically, I took votes away from these frauds in the Republican Party. The question is, now that we see where it has led to an actual metastasis into overt communism, in its early phases, now remember it's only a 10-month-old communist administration, take it on a trajectory out to 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and then even Mugabe levels of 30 years, and tell me what you think this country will be like. If this gang from Chicago has railroaded so much in 10 months, tell me what they'll be doing in 10 years unless they are derailed. Tell me. You think they're going to stop? You think that after they rob you of $700 billion of TARP money and nobody is accountable, and they get Bugs Bunny up there, the former Treasury Secretary Paulson, and goes, and they ask him point blank, where'd the money go? Where'd the first $10 billion go to? Never mind the $700 billion. Can you answer one question? Tell us where the first $10 billion went. He starts hemming and hawing. And they say, Secretary, you haven't answered a question. Excuse me, I got to go right now. I'm a meeting. And nothing happens to them. Meanwhile, Bernie Kerik is in jail for getting some contractors to put in three light bulbs and a coat of paint from contractors. Why is he in jail? I don't even know Bernie Kerik. Why is this man? He's the former New York City police commissioner. If they can get him on trumped up charges, they can get any one of you or me on anything they want, which is why they blacklisted me in England on trumped up charges, and which is why it's a double shame that... Yeah, I got to repeat it now. I'm going to lobby for this for one more minute. I know you're tired of hearing it. Do you realize that I am the only member of the American media ever banned by a Western nation? I'm going to say it again. I am the only member of the American media ever banned from entering a Western nation, and yet it's not been covered by ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox. Well, with some exception, Brent Baer of Fox covered it once or twice, to his credit, until the corned beef came down, rolling down the hill on him. It's a horrible story. And so if they can trump up charges against me with quotes out of context and use a backdoor censorship on me, if they could take the former New York City police commissioner and put him in jail, remember, he hasn't been found guilty. Bernie Kerik, again, I don't know the man. I don't know the man, but there's something wrong with the picture. If they could put the former New York City police commissioner in prison pending trial when he isn't even a flight risk based on a small... technicality. If they can blacklist me from England without due process, tell me what they can do to you. Tell me what they can do to you and what they're going to do to you. That's the whole point. And as I speak, we're we're like a minute to midnight of socialized medicine about to fall down on America. Apparently, the Obama gang is going to win in the House and the Senate. They have negotiated with the gangsters. They've paid them all off. Excuse me, I mean citizen representatives, pardon me. The gangs, I mean the parties, have agreed that they have the votes to pass a government-run health insurance plan in the House, and the Senate negotiators appear headed in the same direction. So, no matter, despite all of the hoopla, all they did was pay off enough of them with direct payments or indirect payments or meetings in toilets up and down the highways of America to get it done. And we're 1 minute to midnight to seeing socialized medicine take place in America. So you get ready to lower the flag of freedom because it's coming. And if you think they're not going to be, once they win this, the next thing they're going to do is push the fraud of global warming cap and trade down your throat. After that, they're going to feel empowered to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens, at which point you may as well leave the country. You will become a second-class citizen in your own country for the rest of your life. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Not making it up. All of it is true. My opinion, though. My opinion, though. You know, I got to tell you this as a side note. After the show last night, I went home, got on my bicycle. I found it. Everyone knows this. The greatest way to fight fatigue is to do a little light exercise. Not heavy, light. Light, moderate. Light, moderate. Think Tai Chi. Don't think Kung Fu. So if you're very exhausted, you know, be careful you don't bust an artery with extreme sports. Get on the bicycle. I go for a ride. I go through a neighborhood park. And I saw they built a new play area for teenagers called the skateboard park. And it was amazing. I saw kids on little small bicycles, like they were 13, 14-year-old boys, going up and down and doing things I could never imagine were possible with such dexterity that I marveled at it. And I had the thought that these boys with this much dexterity are the next generation of naval aviators or Air Force pilots. In other words, think of what it takes, the spatial control to ride down a ramp at that speed, jump up another ramp and flip a bicycle around in the air and come back down. I said, you know, and some of these kids are like long-haired, like hippie kids from, you know, the Bay Area. I said, there's hope for America yet. That's all I could say. If these kids could be put into the military through forced service, and kids who could do this could become great pilots. You want to talk about what we should do in this country? We should have 2 years. We should have 2 years compulsory military service in this country, so we have a standing army that's ready to defend the nation. Because if you think that all wars are over, I got another guest coming for you. There should be 2 years of forced compliance with military service. Absolutely, I think that's a great topic for next week. What would be wrong with 2 years of service? Many of these kids are incapable of doing anything at all. They got a degree in sociology from Purdue. They can't even work in a chicken factory. They wouldn't know how to pluck a chicken. It's sad. I'm not ridiculing the kids. I'm ridiculing the professors and the colleges for leading them to believe that a degree in SOS would get them a job. What can you do with a degree in SOS? Nothing. You have to make up for your deficits by getting a real degree afterwards. So, you know, but you see kids, even like the kids of potheaded, you know, parents in Marin County, California, they ride down, they ride up. You ever see them flip around? It's astounding what they can do. But you, I couldn't do that when I was a kid. There's no way I could have done that. I mean, kids do crazy, you know, things on a bicycle. I remember when we were young, 8, 9, 10, and kids would come racing at us with bicycles to try and hurt us. We had a very nice little trick. We put a wooden stick in the front wheel. It was like facing the cavalry where I grew up. If someone tried to run you down, they were nice kids. There were no drugs in those days, basically, to calm the kids down. So their natural testosterone clicked in. They beat each other up. They fought with each other. They try to run you over. Let's say they had a bicycle and you're walking there from a different street. They'd come racing at you with the bike. So you took a little stick with you and you put it in their front wheel, and the kid took a nice sail through the air. And you continued on your walk. That's all. Today you'd go to jail. You'd go to jail, either you raced at the other kid with the bicycle or put a stick in his front wheel. And as a result, we have a different nation. All they could do is listen to MSNBC and turn on Bill Maher and wonder why a guy with false teeth and fake hair goes on every night with a big smile when he was nothing but a guy who worked in Zimbabwe in a Peace Corps job. Now he's a journalist that Obama approves of. It's unbelievable. That's journalism. Journalism, double irony every night. And so every how sharp we can be, like Pat herself. Pat, there's Pat again with a double ironic statement. I tell you. And then there's the guy with glasses who urinates on himself under the desk, according to workers at the network. That's a journalist to Obama. Thank God I'm not a journalist.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's time for the Friday review of the week's news clips. Monday, we started off with Obama. Listen to this.
And I want everybody to know who are standing in the way of progress. I'm not tired. I'm just getting started. You can throw whatever you want at me. Keep it coming. We're going to get this done. We're going to get health care done. We're going to get clean energy done. We're going to get climate change done. We're going to fix our schools. We are going to deal with the problems internationally that I was elected to deal with.
This is how he gets things done. Doesn't matter who stands in his way, even if it's the American people. Here we have a clip from CNN putting down talk radio.
He's essentially kind of operating like the bully. And if you're on the playground, do you want to be the bully's, you know, under the bully's wing and go along with him and get, therefore, some power by proxy, too? Or do you want to be, like, left out alone on the playground where, you know, who knows who's going to take you out?
Salt says conservative talkers are more popular than liberal talkers because they attract the kind of person who likes strong, aggressive messages.
A bully alone in the playground? Is she serious? They're not the bullies? Next, we have the Mao Tse-Tung lover. The manufacturing czar, Ron Blum.
In retrospect, one finds that these restructurings are better than the slow death that our companies were in. But at the time and in the moment, it is almost never something we welcome. Nevertheless, this is a world we've had to learn about.
But wait, there's more.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And we get it, that if you want a friend, you should get a dog.
Political power through the barrel of a gun is what he says is the way to go? Is this who you wanted in power as a czar? I had Geert Wilders on the show, and these were the peaceful demonstrators in England who didn't agree with him.
We're here to protest against this man, Geert Wilders, who insulted the messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We're here to give him a message that, like he's doing in his interview today, hold up. He will remain hold up, because obviously he knows that in Islam, the punishment for the one who insults the Prophet is capital punishment. And he should take lessons from people like Theo van Gogh and others who face the punishment.
The next one says there are Muslims all over the world who love the Prophet, and anyone who insults the Prophet, kill him. He says not that he will do it, but he needs to be warned of the consequences. Now, this kind of vermin is allowed in England, but Geert Wilders was banned.
He needs to know that there's Muslims in every corner of the earth, and these people, they all have love for the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said, the one who insults any of the Prophets, kill him. That is a capital punishment. Not necessarily that personally I'm going to carry out, but he should be warned that, you know, the consequences of it.
Now listen to clip three.
Geert Wilders has insulted the Prophet and insulted the Quran. And as we know, the Muslims, the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. So we are here to let the people know that we are not going to stand for this no more. That we are here to let the people know that the British, the UK, are hypocrites.
Whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. Now listen to clip number four.
He says so many things against Islam, and he says so many things about Quran, and nothing happens to him, and he gets granted to come into the UK. So we're not going to stand for it here no more. We have come here to let the people know that this is no more. So let the whole world know that if we had an Islamic State today, his head would be on the stake.
He said if they had an Islamic State today, his head would be on a stake. Is that what your liberals want, along with all of the other folks that they put heads on a stake? The gays, women who dare use a telephone? Is that what you're doing here? Which side are you on?
What we say to him is, let him come outside. How is it that this man is now scared? And the police and the government are here supporting him and protecting him from the Muslims. Geert Wilders, the message to him is to come outside and face the Muslims. Let him come outside, let the police go home. 2 minutes. 2 minutes and see how he's faced with the Islamic view on all of this, what he said.
The next one in clip six says, here's the leader, when he comes to the UK, Geert Wilders will meet the lions of Islam who will not put up with him.
When he comes to the UK, he meets the lions of Tawheed, the Muslims that won't stand for this rubbish. They want to say that he's an extremist. They want to say that he's not representing their views. But this dog is the open voice of democracy. We can see that what he says is in the hearts of every government in Europe. We can see that everything that he says is in the heart of every disbeliever.
Then the next one in clip seven chants and says, Islam will come, Islam will dominate from the east and from the west. No matter where he runs, this dog, Islam will be implemented. And the crowd chants, Allah Akbar.
Wherever he goes, let him know that Islam will come. Islam will dominate. Islam will dominate the east of the east and the west of the west. So no matter where he runs, this dog, Islam will be implemented. So he can go and crawl under any rock.
You hear this?
He can go and crawl and any rock he wants in Europe. But no, Islam will come and it will conquer the UK. It will conquer Holland. It will conquer Rome. It will conquer the world.
Now in clip nine, you're not going to believe this, all you good liberals hiding behind your tolerance. The next one says Islam will enter every house on the face of the earth and either elevate or humiliate every person, and they will see the believers victorious and Israel destroyed and the non-believers destroyed and Islam dominate.
Islam will enter the house of every person on this world, and it will either elevate the person or will humiliate the person, and we will see the believers victorious. We will see Israel destroyed. We will see the European crusaders destroyed, and we will see Islam dominate.
Chilling sound from the radical followers of the religion of peace. That's the review for the week. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back. It seems to me that the talks that the Obama administration has been having with Iran are still getting nothing but Iran closer to a nuclear weapon. Joining us now from the Foundation for Democracy in Iran is Ken Timmerman, who's been following this very, very closely.
Well, Michael, we've now had a second round of these talks with Iran, again generating no apparent results. On Friday, the Iranian regime let the Americans know that they would not accept the proposals to turn their low-enriched uranium over to another country for enrichment. But you know what's remarkable about this is not the Iranian refusal. What's really remarkable is that the United States is even discussing this issue. Remember, when we went into this in the beginning, before the first round of talks on the 1st of October, the entire international community was ready to impose tough new economic sanctions on the Islamic Republic, and the Iranians succeeded during the negotiations to simply change the subject. Nobody's talking about new sanctions any longer. They're talking about the terms on which the United States could help the Iranian regime to get even more enriched uranium than they have today. We have to ask a question how this came about and why this came about. And frankly, it's a very important question that until now, not very many people have been asking. I reveal what I think should have been obvious, that the Iranians have in fact felt much more comfortable recently with the Americans because the Obama administration is playing along with them. The Obama administration is making sure that the pressure will not be too high on the Iranian regime. The Obama administration essentially wants the Iranians to feel that they can cut a deal, that they can win in these negotiations, and they're willing, the White House is willing to do quite extraordinary things to achieve that. I'll give you an example. We know that when Obama went to the United Nations at the end of September, he had information in his hand about this new uranium enrichment site at Qom, and yet he said nothing about it. The next day, he stood up with Sarkozy, the French president, in Pittsburgh at the G20 summit, and he began to talk about it. But by that point, it was no longer secret. Why? Because somebody had leaked the information to the Iranians, so the Iranians knew that we were on to their secret site, and they had 5 days to inform the IAEA of the existence of the site and invite them to send inspectors. So, no crisis. Sarkozy, as he was standing next to Obama, was furious. You could see almost literally the smoke coming out of his ears. He was so hopping mad that Obama had not allowed him to talk about the Qom facility the day before, and the day before the Iranian letter to the IAEA had been made public. Something is going on at the White House with leaking information, which, frankly, in any other administration would be called treasonous.
What information are you hearing about this nuclear site?
Now, we're hearing all kinds of disinformation, frankly, Michael, about this nuclear site at Qom. I can tell our listeners a few things that they might not be hearing from other places. First of all is that the American government claims to have first learned about the site in 2006. Well, in fact, that's not true. And I can tell you why I know that, because an Iranian defector provided me with information about the Qom site in March of 2005, and I gave that information to the United States government at that time at a level appropriate and sufficient for it to get into the intelligence food chain. So we knew that something was going on actually in 2005, not in 2006. At that time, the American government had satellite capabilities to monitor that underground, the underground digging going on near Qom. It's actually well outside of the city. And they did for a number of years. What happened more recently is that the facility was clearly nearing completion, and in January of this year, they were starting to install new equipment. President Obama said that he was briefed on this during the transition period between the election and his taking office on January 20th. I am told, again by my Iranian sources, that in late August, there were four or five Americans who traveled secretly to Tehran as emissaries of the President of the United States. They came in from Zurich, Switzerland, to Tehran. They were obviously spotted by Iranian intelligence, which is one of the reasons that I know about this trip. And it is my belief that they came to inform the Iranian regime that the United States was aware of the Qom facility and that they should take appropriate measures so it did not become a crisis. That is exactly what happened, and that is what allowed the Iranians to get off the hook, when in fact what should have happened and what Sarkozy thought was going to happen, what the British thought was going to happen, is that they were all going to pop this secret at the United Nations Security Council when Obama was presiding. The first time an American president was actually personally presiding over the UN Security Council, they were going to pop this question there and generate a huge international crisis. And by generating that crisis, gain the leverage that they needed at the UN Security Council to impose tough new sanctions on Iran. It didn't happen. It didn't happen because Obama didn't want it to happen. He didn't want new sanctions on Iran. His entire goal is to allow the Iranians to get away with whatever they want to do in this nuclear issue. He will claim a victory, regardless of what happens. He will claim a victory and hope that the Iranians don't set off their first bomb until he's out of office. The other thing, Michael, and I think it's very important, has to do with the way that intelligence is being politicized by senior officials within the CIA and other parts of the intelligence community. And the example that I use here was the December of 2007 national intelligence estimate on Iran. That NIE concluded, to the stupefaction of everybody in Congress and everybody who's been following Iran for the past 20 years, that the Iranians had shut down their nuclear weapons program in 2003, and had not, there was no evidence that they had restarted it. Well, very few people actually believed it. I have talked to a number of folks who have been able to read through the classified sources of this 140-page report, and they believe that the most dramatic assertion about shutting down the program was based on a single unvetted source, probably a defector.
Mm-hmm.
The man who drafted the NIE, Tom Fingar, first of all, he was one of the Bush haters in the intelligence community. Fingar stated publicly that he held on to the NIE for months because he didn't like the original conclusion, which was that Iran was continuing to develop nuclear weapons. And so he was hoping that something new would come up. And with this, when this defector, General Ashkari, came out of Iran in February, March of 2007, they were able to use his information to purport that the Iranians had shut down the nuclear weapons program. But here's the kicker, Michael, and this is very serious indeed. I happen to, again, through my activities debriefing Iranian defectors, be in touch with General Ashkari through a very trusted intermediary. And I asked this person to please ask Ashkari, what did he feel? How did he feel about his information being used by the CIA and the National Intelligence Estimate to show that Iran had shut down its nuclear weapons program? About 3 weeks later, his response came back to me, and he said, that's not what I told them. I told them just the opposite.
This is unbelievable to me.
When I told this story to people in Congress, they're absolutely outraged. And now you see there is a movement by Republicans and some Democrats alike to have the intelligence community reevaluate that December 2007 NIE on Iran. They want to take a look at the sources now. They want to make sure that the intelligence is not being skewed, that they're not cherry-picking intelligence, the way that the Democrats accused Bush of doing during the Iraq War. And that is clearly what's happening in this case. So I think we're going to have a lot of developments on this story in the coming months, and I hope I'll be able to be back on the show and keep our listeners up to date.
Yes, please keep us informed. Ken Timmerman, thanks again for being on The Savage Nation. Play some rock and roll. You know how important defending animals is to me, Michael Savage. Gorillas, elephants, to name a few. These noble creatures need to be protected, and I do what I can. Recently, we had A.J. Cady from the International Fund for Animal Welfare on to talk about an elephant relocation project going on, to which I and quite a few of my listeners donated. He joins us now for an update. A.J. Cady, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again.
Remind us what was going on.
Well, the last time we spoke, what was happening is there were about 83 elephants in the country of Malawi that were basically doomed to be killed because they were in an area where there was severe conflict between the animals and the people. And so what IFA was able to do is partner up with the Malawi government, and we moved those elephants, all 83 of them, from an area that was really unsafe into a place called the Majete Park or Majete Reserve. So all 83 elephants, each one was first hit with a tranquilizer dart, and then we loaded them up onto trucks. They were moved to the new location and then checked by the vets to make sure they were healthy and then released back out into the wild. So it's a wonderful win for everybody because the animals are in a much safer location. The people are safer, and it really makes an important precedent showing that there's a way to solve these kinds of problems that works both for animals and for people.
How did the move go?
It was a roller coaster ride, like a lot of these things are. The only really big surprise was when we first started the move, we got some complaints from some people that we didn't expect who were basically saying that they wanted to keep the elephants in place, which is understandable, but the government and the majority of the people really wanted this move to go ahead. So there was a holdup over that. But then when the word came down that the move was okay to proceed, it really was, it was an amazing moment because the local people, a crowd of literally hundreds of people, there was a spontaneous outpouring of people clapping and cheering, and literally the roads were lined with people applauding as the trucks rolled down the road to take the elephants to their new home. They were really that happy to see them go, but to see that they were going safely. So it was an amazing, amazing experience.
How important was the role of my listeners?
It played a huge, huge role in this. I mean, the budget for this, I believe, I'd have to check, but they probably covered a third or more of the costs. And it really made a difference as well, because in this one, we were surprised. You know, some of the delays that happened, the costs were higher than we expected. So, you know, always grateful to people for their support, and especially in this case.
How are the elephants doing now?
As far as I know, I haven't checked in the last week or two, but all indications are good. You know, some of them are radio tagged so and collared, so they go out and check on them. In this type of thing, no news is good news. So everything looks good. They're healthy and sorting themselves out in their new home.
There's still danger? Is there hope?
Well, elephants really are in crisis. Right now, we've even got some news since the last time we spoke. Scientists are saying that over 100 of these endangered animals are dying every single day. And the reality is we know why they're dying. We know how to stop it. But what we really need is for governments around the world to take stronger action and support the African countries who are asking for help. Some of your listeners might remember that, you know, just 20 years ago, elephants were being absolutely wiped out by poachers, and it was international outcry that halted the trade in ivory. And when that happened, elephant herds just started to recover. But now we're seeing poaching skyrocketing again, and it's because Japan, China, and just a handful of some southern African countries have managed to reopen what they call a limited ivory trade. And the lessons on this are they're just crystal clear. Any kind of legal ivory trade just opens the door for illegal killing. The legal market gives these poachers an easy way to launder or sell their illegal stocks. And that's why we're saying the only solution is to maintain a complete and really make it a permanent ban on ivory sales. Anything short of that, all the experience shows that it isn't going to work. And the next sort of stage in the fight on this will come in March, when there's a major meeting of one of the UN bodies that deals with this. And there are some proposals to remove some of the protections for elephants in particular countries. And our point is absolutely not. The moratorium should stay in place, and if anything, it should be made permanent. Because the reality is that if we don't act, what the scientists are saying is that African elephants could be effectively extinct across most of Africa in as little as 15 years. Now, that's not saying that the entire species is going to go extinct, but locally, we're losing them so fast that there will be huge parts of Africa where there will be no elephants, or so few that that the populations in those places just can't survive. So it really is. It's a critical time for elephants.
Where can we read more?
The best way for people to help is to visit our website, which is www.ifaw.org, ifaw.org. Or they could also go to our animal rescue blog, which is Animal Rescue, and just read up on what's happening. And if you care about these issues, please continue to make donations. That's what we need so often, is just the funds to go out with these kinds of things. You know, we know what the solutions are, and we're so grateful for anyone who's willing to help.
AJ Katie, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael. It's a real pleasure.
Michael in Spain, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Thanks for giving all us conservatives out there strength to fight this this liberal agenda. I'm in probably the worst socialist country in the world, Spain, headed by Jose Luis Zapatero. He's got the political savvy of Gavin Newsom, only worse.
Well, here's the thing about Spain. It was a very fine government ruling it until the subways were bombed by the Muslims within. And let's not mince words. Muslims bombed the subways, and immediately the people capitulated. The Spanish lost their guts to fight. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. I was here when it happened. And,
The Spanish have gone from the conquistadors in stainless steel or metal suits to disco kings now?
No, just skinny socialists, you know, with their designer jeans, skinny arm vegetarian types with their little glasses, you know, they try to look like a Woody Allen, you know.
Oh, they're trying to have a low profile, keep their head down.
Yeah, he's a hero over here. They have statues of that pedophile over here.
Of Michael Jackson?
No, Woody Allen.
Oh, Woody Allen is a hero in Spain?
You can't believe it. You can't believe it.
That's a strange one. From a country that gave us the Inquisition to suddenly pick up on Woody Allen, that's a pretty big jump. I mean, that was a nation that invented the term Marrano. You know what that is, don't you?
No, what?
The Marranos were Jews in the Middle Ages who were forced to convert to Catholicism. Otherwise, they would be tortured and killed. So many of them, on the surface, converted into Catholicism, but they practiced the religion under the surface. They were called Marranos.
There's another term for them. But you got to remember that there are a bunch of apologizing sad sacks now. You know, they apologize for being conquistadores. They apologize for the Inquisition. They're always apologizing for the Franco years, which by the way, he saved 60,000 Jews. He allowed them into the country because he knew him.
That's right. I know the whole story of the Spanish Civil War. Most of the Americans that went over in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade were diehard anti-American communists. They should have been thrown out of the country before they went into the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. I actually met a few of those old rotten people in North Beach in the early days. So what are you doing stuck in the Iberian Peninsula?
Well, you know, I'm teaching English over here because I can't find work in America for the last 7 or 8 years.
So you're sort of an illegal immigrant in Spain, in Andalusia. You're in the new Andalusia. You know Andalusia, of course, as a teacher, what that is.
Yes, Al Andalus. That's what they used to call
it. That's right. Have they changed the name of Spain to Andalus yet? To placate the Moors amongst them?
Well, they're trying to get rid of their patron saint, Santiago, who's the patron saint of Moor slayers. I mean, they're trying to get rid of any type of religion here, like they did back in the Republic, by the way.
Well, the communists have long wanted to get rid of the church, and now they're doing it through political correctness.
Absolutely. And, you know, they got rid of it during the Republic, and that's why the Republic failed. You know, the whole idea of socialism, and you've said it, we all say it, it's about getting rid of foundations to destroy the society. So you're just relying on the government. That's it.
That's right. The new religion is the state. The new Messiah is the head of the state. That is why Obama is worshipped as a head of state, because they've turned him into God. They've made him into a substitute for Jesus. Do you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. I call him.
That's right. In other words, the Christian should worship Obama instead of worshiping Jesus, because Obama represents not the church but the state. That's what communism is.
Absolutely. And I mean, you just see it. I mean, Europe is just going down the tubes. I mean, it's like.
Oh, wait a minute. The radical Muslims went down into the tubes and bombed it some compound. I don't think that Alfred Nobel invented. They didn't use TNT.
They used plastic explosives. But now this is you can't believe the overrunning of people from South America, Eastern Europe, Africa, North Africa, Senegal.
But is there a right wing party in Spain that is nationalistic that would like to see the glory of the days of the Great Spain restored. Is there such a group left in that country?
Absolutely. There's a few of them left, but they got to be careful. They can't display, you'll like this, they can't display certain insignias. You can't go on Franco's birthday up to where he's buried and do certain things or say certain things. They're watching, they're filming you. I've been to Franco's.
So in other words, the leftists have turned it into a police state, a fascist police state.
Absolutely.
It's the new Soviet. It's the new Soviet Union with paella. Instead of serving borscht, they serve paella.
Absolutely. Hey,
how is the paella in Spain these days? Is it any good?
It depends on where you go. You know, if you go to certain places, they make it right. If you go to, like, a tourist place, it's complete crap. If you make it at home, you know, because they got all the components to make it with.
I make the best paella in the world. I do, because I use expensive saffron to begin with. Most paella, by the way, since we're talking about cuisine, I can't help it because I lived in Spain for a while, a very brief period. I really love the food. I actually lived in Mallorca, Arenal de Mallorca, and I used to eat in a local little restaurant. I think it was 30 pesetas for lunch. It was unbelievable. Most paella is made not with saffron, but with a cheaper substitute, which simply colors the food rather than flavors it, number one. And number two, they over-oil it. They don't cook it long enough to create that slight crust on the bottom because they're anxious to get it out of the oven. And it's too filled with butter to have a proper taste.
When I've made it before, I mean, you know, you can buy really good saffron here for a very affordable price.
Where is the saffron grown?
It grows all over Spain. I'll tell you what, that's the one good thing the Moors did do. They brought that here, actually, from the Middle East or North Africa.
Well, the Moors also discovered coffee. Everyone forgets that the Arab conquistadors discovered coffee in Ethiopia. Everyone forgets that. That was another great addition to the world.
Chairman.
Thanks for listening in Spain. Michael in Spain, thank you very much. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
This is a great story since I'm a dog lover, and I once had a border collie, which was an amazing dog, Bandit. I don't want to tell you what happened to it because I don't know. I remember I moved to Long Island, and he had been a California dog who used to run freely over the valleys. He'd escape every yard Bandit was ever in. The kids loved him. This dog was so wonderful, Bandit. And no matter what we put him in, he could jump the gate. And he always used to run across the valley and meet up with a girl dog. He was so smart, he would free her from her backyard. I don't know how he did it. And they'd go running around, I swear to God, in the valleys together. So he grew up like that. Then I had to move back to New York for a couple of years, and I lived on Long Island. That's not to be confused with Long Island. I lived on Long Island, and there are long guys there. And the dog was chained in the front of the house, and I had to go off to work. I came home, there was a chain and no dog. And my worst fear is probably that some animals took the Bandit and used it in some terrible torture. That's the worst thing that I don't even want to think about it. But this dog was smart and tough. He once fought a Rottweiler in the neighborhood and scared the Rottweiler. The Rottweiler didn't run away, but the Rottweiler backed down. I don't know how he did it. He did. So the dogs are geniuses. Apparently the collies are the smartest of the breeds, or poodles. I don't know. But there's a new study out of Germany. It has found that a border collie named Rico now understands more than 200 words and can learn new ones as quickly as many children. And so they say that's good news for those of us who talk to our dogs. Now, if this dog has a vocabulary of 200 words, that means he has a larger vocabulary than Tony Soprano and all of the rap artists in America put together. They seem to be stuck on one letter, words that begin with an F. I don't know why, but they make a lot of money at it. But Rico understands more than 200 words, and that's interesting. So the researchers have proven that people who talk to their dogs are cutting-edge communicators, not just a bunch of eccentrics. Now, the researchers found that Rico knows the names of dozens of play toys and can find the one called for by his owner. And this dog has a vocabulary size about the same as apes, dolphins and parrots trained to understand words. But as I say, his vocabulary at 200 words is definitely larger than those of all of the Goombas on The Sopranos when you add it up. But it's a very popular show, and people make millions of dollars an episode for speaking as few words as possible. So it just shows you that the more words you know doesn't mean that you make more money. In fact, in America today, the less words you know, you make more money. In fact, those who know fewer words make more money. That goes for politicians who speak in sound bites, and that goes for actors who speak in approximately 50 to 60 words maximum. And that, of course, goes for rap artists who have a vocabulary of about 40 words, and The Sopranos who have a vocabulary of about 73 words. So the old adage of, you know, literacy may be gone with the wind. Maybe it's an endangered thing to do is teach your children a lot of words. Maybe you shouldn't teach your children a lot of words. Have them watch Howard Stern's show and to abuse the mentally ill. They'll get very far in the world that they're growing up in. The researchers put several known toys in a room, along with one that Rico the dog had not seen before. From a different room, Rico the dog's owner asked him to fetch a toy, using a name for the toy the dog had never heard. The border collie was able to go into the room with the toys and 7 times out of 10 bring back the one he had not seen before. The dog seemingly understood that because he knew the names of all the other toys. He figured the new one must be the one with the unfamiliar name. So it just shows you, 200 words now, and that means that if you're talking to your dog, you really do have man's best friend. Man's best friend. It's the espresso again that I had. Every time I do this, it's a sacrifice for you, the listener. Because if I have an espresso before I go on the air, the show is phenomenal. I'm more eloquent, I'm more loquacious, I'm more focused. The firing order is much better. In other words, the timing is better. It's like setting a racing engine, a V18, in perfect tune. However, I pay for it because then I'm strung out at the end of the show. I'm so, like, way up there on caffeine, and I can't have a drink. Because if I follow up a caffeine up with alcohol of any kind, I got a migraine for 2 days. So, okay, you know what I mean? I do it for you. This is the Savage Nation.
Good day, sir. Looks like you're looking for some cholesterols.
Yes. What are your surname?
Perhaps you'd be interested in Dr. Grodbort's Victorious Mongoose, 1902A, concealable ray pistol, miniature version.
You have to.
Yes, show me.
It's incredibly minute. It's so small it measures a couple of thumbs in a bit and is absolutely exquisitely detailed.
What?
I like this.
Well, it's made from confoundingly weighty metal and has some rather uncomfortable-looking protrusions, as you can see.
Dr.
Grodbort's Victorious Mongoose, 1902A. To a concealable ray pistol, miniature version.
Great technology. How many are available?
For ordering information, visit WETANZ.com. That's WETANZ.com. Weta.com. Dr. Grodbort's infallible ether oscillators. Discover the world of Weta. WETANZ.com.